Day to play. Actually, it's not. Saturday is day to play around the Molloy compound here. Good evening, truth seekers. It's 7 past the hour. Welcome to tonight's program. Did y'all have a fun May Day? Did you dance around the maypole? Get out of your skin and run around in your bones? That's always fun, right? It's a gorgeous day here in Atlanta. I was going to set up a maypole, but word came in right before the program that half of Republicans in my state of Georgia think that secession is a good idea. Did you not see this? Kathy just about dropped her mouth full of ice cream. Oh my God. yeah, when asked if Georgia would be better off as an independent nation, oh Christ, or as part of the United States, 43% of Republicans in the state of Georgia selected independent nation. Now 52% said, no, I want to stay with the United States. But 43%, want to become an independent nation. And 32% of Georgia Republicans said they would approve of, Georgia leaving the United States. Altogether, you know, with other states and becoming, rebuilding the old South. Now the reason this came up, there was a poll because, the General Assembly of Georgia, a weirder collection of religious freaks, nutcases, I cannot describe the condition of the Georgia General Assembly, which consists of the House and the Senate. It is a collection of everybody from swamp dwellers in South Georgia to these mountain freaks from North Georgia who constantly sound like their mouth is stuffed with mushrooms and alfalfa. It's just unbelievable. The things that they vote on. This used to be a state run by Democrats. And back in that particular slice of Georgia's history, things got done here, as evidenced by the city of Atlanta. Love it or leave it, Atlanta, when the state and the city was run by Democrats, well, the city still is, but when the state of Georgia was run by Democrats, Georgia, except in the outlying areas, managed to avoid things like lynching black folk and burning Greyhound buses that were trying to push the Public Accommodations Act. Georgia had its share of hillbillies that decided that black folk needed to be burned alive, but a very small number compared to some of our neighboring states. Like, I can think of one, Alabama. Oh, there's another one, Mississippi. Oh, here's another one, South Carolina. But Georgia left the Democratic camp. Oh, I don't know. They started to leave the Democratic Party about 8 or 10 years ago when the religious right started to, you know, I mean, the hand wavers, the snake handlers, the ones waiting for the rapture. I think they're waiting for the rapture so they can give an excuse to get naked in public. But, something happened, something very vile. Right around the time that book, Midnight in the Garden of what was that? Good and Evil. Which is a great book. It's a true story, about a story in Savannah. But when that book came out, all of a sudden, I think Georgians decided, the political class and the religious class decided, well, it's time that we clean up our image. We're going to get back with Jesus. We're going to get right with Jesus. And, oh, Lord, ever since then, it's been this, I don't know. Like I say, thank God I've got a pickup truck and a gun rack and enough weaponry that when, you know, when we want to go up the mountains, you know, I can pretty much disguise myself. And so can Kathy. And we just take Molly and blacken two of her front teeth, and she just looks like a normal child down here in Georgia. Stick a sugar tit in her mouth. Y'all know what a sugar tit is? You don't know what that is, sugar tit? What it is this. You get you a piece of cheesecloth. You know what cheesecloth? Jesus, I can't explain everything to you Yankees. You get a piece of cheesecloth and you put a great big old dollop of, do you know what a dollop is? Pick a big old dollop of Crisco. You know, not the oil, that white stuff. You put a big old dollop of Crisco in the cheesecloth, and then you spoon on 2, 3, 4, 6 tablespoons of sugar, and then you tighten that up so you got that piece of cheesecloth. So you have that thing in there, and then you put a rubber band around it, and then you give it to the youngin'. And that'll keep a youngin', you know, a child under the age of 2, that'll keep that youngin' quiet all day, just sucking on that sugar tit. That's what they call it. I'm sorry if that's against FCC rules and regs. It's common usage down here. But anyway, the General Assembly of Georgia recently passed Senate Resolution 632 in support of the state sovereignty movement by a vote of 43-1. 43-1. The sovereignty movement is what Rick Goodhair Perry over in Texas has been talking about. Well, you know what? We need to get out of here. Until the swine flu thing hit, and all of a sudden Rick Goodhair is just going nuts now. But one of our writers for the Journal Constitution, Jay Bookman, a columnist, real good writer, characterized that vote as accidentally threatening the state's ties to the United States. Jay writes, quote, "In fact, Senate Resolution 632 did a lot more than merely threaten to end this country. It stated that under the Constitution, the only crimes the federal government could prosecute were treason, piracy, and slavery. Therefore, all acts of Congress which assume to create, define, or punish other crimes are altogether void and of no force." That's what the Georgia Senate declared. Oh, my God, my God, my God. I'll tell you, there is something. This is what happens when a political party, the Republican Party, goes through when it went through. Now, remember, it was a Georgian that set up the utter destruction of the Republican Party. That was Newt Gingrich. Well, he isn't actually from Georgia. I think he was originally from Iowa someplace. But he'd been down here long enough that he started talking with that funny kind of sound to his voice. But it was Newt who set this all up back in the mid-90s, the end of the Republican Party. Now, he thought he was setting up the beginning of his political career, which didn't happen. It lasted, I think, his big-time career lasted about 4 years. He was outshone and out-everythinged by Bill Clinton. You know, you get one of these kind of slick-talking white boys from up north, and you get a slick-talking white boy from down south, and put both of them on just about the same education level, that southern white boy is going to win every time. He's going to get more, more of the co-eds, too. Trust me on that one. So it was Newt Gingrich. Anybody wants to find out why the Republican Party is spiraling into this death trip right into the toilet has to look no further than Newt Gingrich when he came up with this contract on America. What he meant was contract on the Republican Party. He thought it would be his springboard to fame and greatness, and he could become a great political leader, and it just didn't happen. So now you have an ex-drug addict, this porcine talk show host who is the titular head of the Republican Party. That would be the pig man, Rush Limbaugh. And this cast of characters that, I don't know, it's like something out of, I don't know, a screenplay that Bob Alexander might write if he had too much to drink. You know, you've got Piyush Jindal, you've got Sarah Palin, you've got Newt trying to make his way back in. Now you have this new organization, Future for a New American America or something, I don't know, that some of these losers, you got Jeb Bush, I mean, it just goes on and on, doesn't it? You got Joe the Plumber, and then this whole cast of demons on right-wing talk radio This guy, Jay Severin, who's this talk show host in Boston, who's obviously having his 5 minutes in the limelight before somebody flushes him, with his scurrilous, filthy, dirty remarks about Mexicans, and Neil Bortz, who is terrified to leave Atlanta. He's been in Atlanta for about the past 40 years doing talk radio of a sort. You know, he jumped on the bandwagon. These guys, these white guys, are just busting up on Mexicans with some of the most evil, vile comments I think I've ever heard on talk radio. If they said this about Jews or black folk or Catholics or Italians, there would be a lynch party down to haul Neil Bortz out to the nearest tree, or Jay Severin to the nearest tree, and string these sons of bitches up. I gotta move. I've got to move. W's got a pistol, it's burning in his hand. This is turn of the world into one big Texas. What? Turn of the world into one big Texas. Turn of the world into one big
Texas. Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
This is a good idea. Tim in Indiana suggests, he writes, I heard a caller on another show today suggest Anita Hill for the Supreme Court. That would be fantastic. Just watch Uncle Thomas choke on his own bile. Wouldn't that be great? I mean, she is a law professor, isn't she? Anita Hill, the Supreme Court. She's a brilliant student or a teacher of constitutional law. I can just see Long Dong Silver just freaking out when word came down. Clarence, guess who's going to sit on the Supreme Court with you? Oh my God. No, that would never happen. It's too much cosmic justice involved for that to happen. Prairie 2 sent me a missive. I was thinking about Prairie 2 today when I went to the nearest Publix supermarket and bought some canned goods. It's very strange to stand inside a supermarket and you're looking around thinking, okay, I'm here. Now what? What do I get? I mean, we don't really, you know, have any need. This is the H1N1 flu food, flu pandemic food. So I thought, okay, get some water. But then I thought, well, the water sits in these, you know, these big plastic containers that I've been told now leaches out chemicals that will prevent you from getting pregnant. Okay, no problem with that. All right, I'll go ahead and get that. So I got all these big, what are those, Kathy? 2.5 gallon jugs of water, and got some oatmeal. Boxes of oatmeal and pickles. Got some pickles. I you know, a bottle of ketchup, some Bush's kidney beans. What else did I get?
You're going to have a feast. And then
tomato sauce, tomato
favorite,
paste.
Yeah. Mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise. I got three.
Lots and lots.
Three. Well, that's one of the basic food groups as far as I'm concerned. Mayonnaise. Got three of those. Three big old jugs of Blue Plate. What else? What else did I get in that run to the so I'm standing, I'm thinking about Prairie too, and I'm thinking,
well, some canned peaches.
Yeah, I got some canned peaches. I think some canned, those little oranges. What are those called? The mandarin oranges. What else did I didn't know. I didn't know what to do. Did I get any beans? Any beans back there? Can you see back there? We have the storage area in the basement, off a room off the studio. It's also, I don't know, whoever lived here before, I guess it was like a bomb shelter or something. But, you know, it's all concrete and brick. And we kind of use it as a storage room. I'm standing and I'm thinking, okay, if Bruce Enberg were here, Prairie too, he would certainly show me what to buy, and I couldn't think of anything. So just got a bunch of water, and I don't know. Oh, I did buy 12 packs of incense. Al-Fajr incense, which I really like. You know, patchouli. Mostly it was sweet patchouli, and which is my favorite scent. And what's the one you like? You like sandalwood, don't you? So anyway, the synchronicity of it all. I come back from the public supermarket, and there's an email from Prairie 2 with the latest update here, which we'll share with you in a second. I don't think I've got time to do it right now. What else we got tonight? According to the Salt Lake Tribune newspaper, lawyers who are Mormons, Latter-day Saint lawyers, it says here, and psychologists, had a hand in developing the torture policies. Latter-day Saint Timothy Flanagan, Deputy White House Counsel, who along with David Addington, John Yua, Beto Gonzalez, and Jim Haynes comprised the secretive War Council of Lawyers, self-appointed group, described as having virtually no experience in law enforcement, military service, counterterrorism, or the Muslim world. And together, they were the brain trust that devised the legal cover that Dick Cheney needed to work his will. Flanagan once told his Latter-day Saint Ward congregation that it was gratifying, quote, to work in a White House where every day was begun with prayer, end quote. In 2005, prior to his rejection by the Senate to be Alberto Gonzalez's deputy attorney general, Flanagan was asked whether waterboarding, mock executions, physical beatings, and pain stress positions were off limits. He replied, quote, it depends on the facts and circumstances. Inhumane can't be coherently defined. Jay Bybee is a Brigham Young University Law School graduate. He was the one who wrote the opinion. The Mormons, huh? Two devout Mormons also engineered the more grisly wet work. They were psychologists, James Mitchell and John Jessen. I mean, this is astonishing. And this is coming from the Salt Lake Tribune newspaper. More when we come back and Prairie 2. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us if you can.
Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. For our podcast subscribers, I think we have a new video going up tomorrow. You sent it to Ben today, right? It'll be up tomorrow or late tonight. Brand new Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag video. Not as many bad words in this one as the last one. The last one was it was kind of like the creme de la creme. It was just the sine qua non of crappy, junky, hate-filled, psychopathic emails. But we do, I think we selected four that went in today's video. And one of them is from a woman, a student, a college student who describes herself as a real hottie. And what she has to say to me in her email, brief as it was, was certainly worth 25 cents, True Seeker, to go check it out. That's what it would cost you to be a subscriber, 25 cents a show. Not to see the video that comes along with your subscription. 25 cents a day is what it costs to be a Molloy podcast subscriber, and that includes Molloy's Uncensored Mailbag. So if you are a subscriber, go check it out later tonight or tomorrow. Ben will have it up. And this one, where do we film that? This one's in our kitchen, right? We filmed this one in the kitchen. Yeah, okay. We're doing little chunks of the Molloy compound so that, the camo wearing patriot, run around in the woods with their bib rally types can put it all together and say, let's go get that son of a bitch now. God. So anyway, David R. Irvine, who is himself a Mormon, writing in the Salt Lake Tribune, comes to the conclusion that the decisions which put us in the grim business of torture, body snatching, extraordinary renditions, making people disappear, indefinite confinement without charges, warrantless wiretapping, the decisions were made by the president and vice president. And while that may be true, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints served as the enablers. Not only did they provide the legal architecture, they provided the, quote, scientific, end quote, shine for the plunge into the barbaric business of torture. David writes, take Latter-day Saint Timothy Flanagan, Deputy White House Counsel, who along with David Addington, John Yoo, Alberto Gonzalez, and Jim Haynes comprised the secretive War Council of Lawyers, a self-appointed group that Jane Mayer, writing in The Dark Side, Mayer describes as having virtually no experience in law enforcement, no experience in military service, no experience in counterterrorism, no experience in the Muslim world. But these rat bastards are the ones who wrote the memos. David Irvine says, together they were the brain trust that devised the legal cover that Cheney needed to work his will. They secretly crafted the warrantless surveillance program, which allowed the National Security Agency to intercept telephone calls and emails to and from American citizens within the United States. They secretly devised the Bush military commissions, which were essentially kangaroo courts, and legally insufficient to satisfy the minimal adjudicatory standards required under the Geneva Conventions, which, as provided by the Constitution and Congress, constitutes the supreme law of the land. They secretly conspired to ignore the law and frame interrogation techniques around the methods of the Spanish Inquisition, the Soviet KGB, and Chairman Mao. And it was Flanagan who once told his Latter-day Saint congregation that it was gratifying, quote, to work in a White House where every day was begun with prayer. Oh, my God. Two devout Mormons, David Irvine writes, also engineered the more grisly wet work. Because the CIA lacked personnel in 2001 with interrogation expertise, the CIA turned to two psychologists, James Mitchell and John Jessen, who had worked with the Air Force's survival, evasion, resistance, and escape programs. Neither had an intelligence or interrogation background. Neither had experience with Muslim terrorists. But according to the FBI, they had experience in designing, testing, implementing, and monitoring torture techniques that were illegal in the United States and elsewhere in the civilized world. Mormons. This is, and the guy writing this, David Irvine, is a Salt Lake City attorney, former Utah legislator, residing in Bountiful, Utah. He was commissioned in the U.S. Army Reserve as a strategic intelligence officer in 1967, retired as a brigadier general. He taught prisoner of war interrogation and military law for 18 years for the 6th United States Army Intelligence School. And he's a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So he knows of what he's speaking. This psychologist, James Mitchell, advised that suspects must be treated like dogs in a cage. He said, quote, it's like an experiment when you apply electric shocks to a caged dog. After a while, he's so diminished he can't resist, end quote. This methodology became the basis for prisoner treatment at Guantanamo, Bagram, Afghanistan, CIA secret prisons, and Abu Ghraib. It involved isolation, sensory deprivation, disorientation, nudity, sexual humiliation, waterboarding, painful stress positions, withholding food and medical treatment, extended sleep deprivation, and subjection to temperature extremes. These were used singly and more commonly in combination with one another. And people wonder sometimes why I am an atheist. Now, there's a follow-up to this that is these two former guys I was just talking about, Mitchell Jensen and or Bruce Jensen and Jim Mitchell. According to they were paid. Both of these psychologists were paid $1,000 a day by the CIA to supervise the torture and waterboarding of U.S. detainees. That's according to a report published late Thursday, yesterday. According to current and former government officials cited by ABC News, the CIA doled out responsibility for waterboarding to a private contractor, Mitchell, Jessen, and Associates. Waterboarding of detainees was designed by the two men running the firm, Bruce Jessen and Jim Mitchell. The two worked out of an unmarked office in Spokane, Washington, according to ABC. Both men refused to speak on the record. Associates say the two made good money doing this work, boasting of being paid $1,000 a day by the CIA to oversee the use of torture. It's astonishing what people will do. And on the one hand, on the other, they claim to be adherents to the teachings of the Prince of Peace. Huh? We're surrounded by these people. Surrounded by them. And some people wonder why I walk the streets of Atlanta and the country roads out here in the foothills fully goddamn armed. Are you kidding me? All right, from Prairie 2... Subject line, everything is trending down except bucket sales. Prairie 2 writes, weekly unemployment claims were down slightly, but with continuing claims setting a new record yet again. There are few, if any, signs of recovery. Unemployment has passed 10% for 109 U.S. cities, reflecting the continuing collapse of the manufacturing sector. While there is talk in the media that the decline is flattening out based on polls of managers and other indicators, this kind of forecasting is little better than reading tea leaves. The real numbers are still in decline, with a more than 1% drop in manufacturing output for April, and with the first quarter down 20% on an annual basis. This was the fifth straight quarter of contraction. In addition, factory shipments were down in April for the eighth month in a row, setting a new record. The euro has been advancing against the dollar, as China reports increased manufacturing output and U.S. output continues trending downward with no policies in place that could change the outlook. Obama may save the U.S. car assembly plants, but the real manufacturing of things like Chevy engine blocks is being done in China. The shifting of these jobs to China has accelerated with the sagging economy and the lack of credit in the U.S. It is no problem for China's companies to obtain credit from the Chinese banks, and, well, they should, since their future is secure, because they are protected by their government. Unlike the 8 years, I'm adding to what Prairie 2 writes, unlike the 8 years of the Bush crime family and the 8 years of the misbegotten policies where it concerns trade of Bill Clinton. Prairie 2 goes on. The only good news at the end of this week is that analysis of the NAFTA swine flu virus showed that it lacks a single protein found in the 1918 strain that is needed to make it reproduce easily in humans. Of course, this virus has now spread to humans, even if it is not that potent. As long as the virus is in circulation, there is the very real possibility that it could acquire the missing trait and the pandemic could begin in earnest. It looks like we still have time to stockpile canned goods. Don't forget to get a new bucket to wear on your head, just in case. Prairie 2.
more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Where is it? Oh, yeah. Irish Dave says, by the way, regarding Mormon lawyers, we have another one. Harry Reid, who is the Senate Majority Leader. Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Yeah, Harry Reid. And you know what's real funny to me is the people, what is real funny is the people who persist in saying there is some Jewish conspiracy in the U.S. Congress, when in fact it appears to be a Mormon conspiracy. I always thought it was a Catholic conspiracy. And then just when I start thinking that, then the Protestants, the evangelical Protestants start in again. So, but you notice there is a common thread with all that. These are religious people applying their interpretation of, all things supernatural in the U.S. Congress. That's not the way it's supposed to be, is it? Is it? I don't know. All right, we have an announcement from President Obama. He was he surprised the White House press pool today by interrupting Secretary Robert Gibbs' briefing with the official announcement about the coming retirement of Justice Souter. Now we're going to play for you what he describes as he describes what kind of justice he's seeking for the bench, and the Republican response to this. Has been, they're ready to declare warfare. At least Orrin Hatch, another Mormon lawyer, came out today and said, he kind of snickered, because he could see he could understand fully the real politic involved here. And he said, no, you know, Barack Obama's not going to appoint a conservative. He's not going to appoint somebody who is, willing to murder for once and for all a woman's right to privacy, i.e. Roe v. Wade. No, he's not going to do that. And Orrin Hatch said, you know, as long as the person he nominates has judicial qualifications, he'll be confirmed. Every once in a while, someone like Orrin Hatch will say something that, you know, makes sense. But the crazy people on the right, they're the ones that are going to be so much fun. The psychopaths, the Republicans in the Senate, and the House, who are gearing up, and all these non-government organizations out here, these Christian right organizations who are just frothing at the mouth, and their hands are sliding down inside their undergarments as they grip something. I don't know what the hell they're gripping as they get ready for, they're girding their loins. Oh, that's it. Okay. They're girding their loins as they're getting ready for this fight between Gog and Magog where it concerns the, nomination that Barack Obama is going to make for Supreme Court Justice. Now, what type of person is he going to nominate? And listen, this is what has the Christian right wetting its bloomers.
I will seek somebody with a sharp and independent mind and a record of excellence and integrity.
Oh, no!
I will seek someone who understands that justice isn't about some abstract legal theory or footnote in a casebook. It is also about how our laws affect the daily realities of people's lives.
Oh, no!
Whether they can make a living and care for their families. Whether they feel safe in their homes and welcome in their own nation.
Oh, no!
I view that quality of empathy.
Empathy?
Of understanding and identifying with people's hopes and struggles as an essential ingredient for arriving at just decisions and outcomes. I will seek somebody who is dedicated to the rule of law.
Uh-huh.
Who honors our constitutional traditions.
Okay.
Who respects the integrity of the judicial process and the appropriate limits of the judicial role. I will seek somebody who shares my respect for constitutional values on which this nation was founded and who brings a thoughtful understanding of how to apply them in our time.
Now, you got to wonder, why would any conservative fight a nominee like that? Because Barack Obama left out some essential sentences there. He didn't say, and I will further seek out a nominee who will end this nonsense about a woman's right to an abortion. Who came up with that crap? So we're going to put a stop to that. Also, I'm seeking someone who will tell the queers to get back in the closet. There's not going to be any marriage crap here. We're going to make sure that the Supreme Court says, no, you don't have a constitutional right to anything. The Fourth Amendment, Twelfth Amendment, Eighth Amendment, Tenth Amendment, whatever the hell amendment is. Let me see, what else? Oh, yeah, as far as guns, yes. So I'm seeking a nominee on the Supreme Court who will guarantee that every person in America, down to the age of five, I don't want to go below five, but down to the age of five, has the right to own, get a permit, and carry a gun. And not a permit that, you know, comes through a permitting process, but a permit that is filled out by a parent. Okay, not the parent, a minister. You see, he didn't say that. That's what the rabid right, these drooling, dribbling psychopaths want to hear. Guess what, monkeys? It ain't going to happen. And guess what else, monkeys? Whoever Barack Obama nominates will be confirmed, monkeys. You can do whatever you want. Beat on your cages, shove a banana in your ear. It doesn't make any difference. He will be confirmed, or she will be confirmed. I frankly hope it's a female judge of Mexican descent. But then that's just me. Huh? Or Anita Hill. I would love it to be Anita Hill. If there was a cosmic hoo-ha or, a mountainous muffin who rules everything, and could pull strings and push buttons and get inside Barack Obama's head the way this cosmic muffin obviously got inside George Bush's head and said, go invade two countries. You know, if something could get inside Barack Obama's head and say, I want Anita Hill. Ooh, Lord. Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be great fun? All right, stick around. You can do it. You can do it. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. We're back. This is the Malloy program. Welcome to our listeners in L.A. Now the Mighty Ducks have quacked off stage. Good God. Oh, well. They're still doing hockey? In L.A.? Hockey? For Christ's sake, it's summer. Oh, well. Never mind. You got to do what you got to do, right? Did you hear that little bit of audio of Condoleezza Rice? She did two things yesterday in this little bit we're going to play for you. She's channeling Dick Nixon at the very end. What was that? Oh, it's a cat. Somehow. Oh, I get it. Wait a minute. Hold on, everybody. Hold on just a minute.
I love my job.
No, wait a second. Hold on just a second. The cat got in the Hold studio on. Here.
We have to find a cat.
Thunderstorm. There you go, cat. Get out.
Don't mind us. We're just, you know, Mike might start the vacuum here.
Did you lock up the ducks and the chickens?
Mom will sew the curtains and Dad will build a stage. We can have a show in the barn.
Where was I? Oh, yeah. Condoleezza Rice channels Dick Nixon.
Did you turn off the stove?
Channels Dick Nixon. Implicates herself in a conspiracy to commit numerous felonies. And what else did she do here? Well, you can decide. You got to hear the shoe lady here. She uses the Nixon defense. It's incredible. She was at Stanford University in a dorm. What the hell is she doing there? She got cornered by some students with cameras rolling. This is where Condoleezza Valdez says waterboarding is not torture because it was authorized by the president, who said it was legal. Oh, my God.
You're the one who authorized torture to the people. Sorry, not torture. I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Waterboarding.
Uh-huh.
Waterboarding. Is waterboarding torture?
The president instructed us that nothing we would do would be outside of our obligations, legal obligations, under the Convention Against Torture. So that's, and by the way, I didn't authorize anything. I conveyed the authorization of the administration to the agency that they had policy authorization subject to the Justice Department's clearance.
Okay.
That's what I did.
Is waterboarding torture?
And I just said, the United States was told, we were told, nothing that violates our obligations under the Convention Against Torture. And so, by definition, if it was authorized by the president, it did not violate our obligations under the Convention Against Torture.
Thank you.
All right. Secretary.
And so, by definition, if it was authorized by the president, it did not violate our obligations under the Convention Against Torture. Really? What about Dick Cheney's death squad that he had circling the globe? What about that one, Condi? Huh? Isn't she a piece of work? She looked a little bit, I saw her in the video, and no offense intended here because, you know, occasionally I will have too much Jack Black and have to sit and stare at the woods for about 2 or 3 hours in order to recenter myself. But I had the feeling that Condoleezza Rice was really soused today when she was in the men's dorm at Stanford University. Did you see that? Did you see the video? Do you think that she looked a little bit, just a little bit too glassy-eyed? A little bit too grab-assy. Did you notice that? Huh? Hey, boys. Hi. Waterboarding? Oh, no. In the video. So I think she was sober enough, though, to establish her defense, because Condoleezza is in this up to her bloodshot eyeballs, just like everybody else in the Bush crime family. But her defense is, the president instructed us that nothing we would do would be outside of our obligations under the Convention Against Torture. So there you go. The president told her it was okay. Condi, it's okay. You know, yeah, I wonder if her mother ever said to her, or her grandmother ever said to her, well, Condoleezza Rice, if all the other children jumped off a cliff, would you? That's what this sounds like. Well, the president said it was okay, so we all went and did it. All of us, plus all those Mormon lawyers. Isn't that a kick in the ass, huh? We had a bunch of Mormon lawyers, Stanford College boy student. You're kind of cute. We had a bunch of Mormon lawyers. How about that? Huh? Does that grab you right in the, you know, Mormon lawyers who never had any experience doing squat, but they came up with all the things we could do. God, we had 8 years of fun. Someday, Miss Rice will regret that. Her comments raised eyebrows from many observers who compared her answer to that of Dick Nixon's famous or infamous quip, when the president does it, that means it's not illegal. John Dean, who was Nixon's butt boy for the longest period of time until he just got tired of not being able to sit down and went before the Watergate committee and blew the whistle. John Dean said he found Rice's comments surprising. And he said, quote, she tried to say she didn't authorize anything, then proceeded to say she did pass orders along to the CIA to engage in torture if it was legal by the standard of the Department of Justice. Dean went on to say, quote, this really puts her right in the middle of a common plan, as it's known in international law, or a conspiracy, as it's known in American law. And this is indeed a crime, if it indeed happened the way we think it did happen, end quote. Asked if her comparison between her comments and Nixon's were fair, Dean said it was kind of fuzzy. John Dean said, quote, she was obviously trying to extricate herself and keep herself at a safe distance. You know, that she was only operating under some general guidance of the president making things legal. So it's not clear whether this is a full-throated Nixonian-type defense or whether it's a lot of confusion of the facts and throwing things up there to try to protect herself. End quote. And John Dean added, quote, these kinds of statements are going to come back and be interesting to any investigator, end quote. John Dean was on Oberman's program. Oberman then asked him whether Obama was violating the Geneva Conventions prohibiting torture himself by refusing to prosecute those responsible. And John Dean said, quote, he is indeed in violation if the United States does not undertake investigation of this or ultimately prosecution if that's necessary. It's not only the Geneva Convention. The Convention Against Torture also requires this. There are no exceptions with torture. There are no real things like torture light. The world community, I think, Dean said, is going to hold the United States responsible. And if we don't proceed, somebody is going to proceed. Well, we can hope. I hate being in this limbo state, don't you? I mean, I'm starting to feel like I need a shower every 20 minutes. I really am. We have no plans because we don't have any money right now, but we have no plans to travel outside the country. Every time we have done so, usually, you know, people find out we're Americans. It's, you know, really doesn't make that much difference. But I would think now that all this stuff is out there. Anyone who is traveling outside the United States might find it a little uncomfortable, maybe. I know I would. Of course, when Kathy and I and the kid travel now, we look like we look like refugees ourselves. You know, the stuff we lug around and where we stay and where we eat. It's not like, you know, the ugly American prancing around third world countries acting like we're in a third world country, you know. But I would be a little bit nervous right now to, I don't mean necessarily fearful of physical safety, except in certain parts of the world right now I would, but I mean, just traveling someplace where, you know, somebody might say, oh, you're from the United States. Yeah, I'm from the United States. Well, your country tortures, right? Yeah, my country tortures. Well, your president's going to do something, right?
Here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
You stopped his car, baby, get in. He didn't stop driving till he had the support of my band. I took the back seat out, I put it on the ground. No need to tell you what.
It is 21 past the hour. A lot of talk about torture of so-called detainees. Well, I don't know why I say so-called. They are detainees, but I guess I should say so-called war criminals, right? Or terrorists. That's the word I'm looking for. The war criminals are on our side. lot of debate about who's responsible in this country for setting up these torture camps. In other words, tortures received the most attention among all the different war crimes attributed to the Bush administration. But not any attention, or very little, has been focused, except I think in the New York Times a couple of years ago, on the people we were holding in Afghanistan and Iraq who were murdered by either the questioners, the torturers, whether those torturers were CIA or U.S. I doubt if they were U.S. military, because I think any soldier would know that he or she does not have to accept an illegal order. And if forced to do so, that he or she has recourse up the chain of command. So I doubt if it was somebody in the military. I don't know. I don't know what's happened to the U.S. military, but I doubt it. It was CIA or NSA or some of these private contractors, or maybe a couple of Mormons. I don't know. But at least 100, according to reports that have been circulating around the Internet. And I think New York Times put the number around 50. Detainees who have died, let's put it in the passive tense, died while in our custody. The active, or not passive tense, but the passive voice, the active voice would be, we killed them. We have killed about 100 detainees, 50 to 100, by torturing them to death. Now, that torturing to death might need a little qualification. It might have been somebody we were torturing who had a weak heart or bad kidneys, and they died as a result of the stress of torture, may have had a heart attack or a stroke or, you know, that sort of thing. But while nobody is focusing on those deaths, nobody is focusing on one of the truly horrific aspects of the Bush crime family and the stain that is on this country, our country now, probably. Well, I don't know. Maybe forever. Maybe not. And that is the abuse of children. The best kept secret, according to Michael Haas, who is an author. He has a book out, George W. Bush, War Criminal, subtitled The Bush Administration's Liability for 269 War Crimes. Michael Haas points out that the best-kept secret of the Bush war crimes is that thousands of children have been imprisoned, tortured, otherwise denied rights under the Geneva Conventions and related international agreements. Haas says, yet both Congress and the media have strangely failed to identify the very existence of child prisoners as a war crime. And he cites the first example of war crimes against children, which are well documented, occurred during the invasion of Afghanistan in 2001 when the Children's Hospital in Kabul was bombed. Its patients thereby murdered, contrary to the Red Cross Convention of 1864. Other children were killed as collateral damage during the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, contrary to the Geneva Convention's ban on indiscriminate killing in wartime. During the spring of 2004, during the assault on Fallujah in Iraq, some 300 children were killed. Their dead bodies were filmed live on Al Jazeera television throughout the Arab-speaking world. In 2008, the Bush administration reported to the UN-assisted Committee on the Rights of the Child that the United States, from 2002, had detained 2,400 children in Iraq and 100 children in Afghanistan. Though another source claims that the figure for Afghanistan is at least 800 boys aged 10 to 15, from whom as many as 64 were sent to Guantanamo, of which there were 21 there as of May 2008. This month, the Committee on the Right of the Child, the UN organization, upbraided, criticized the United States for charging minors with war crimes instead of treating underage persons as victims of war. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's two children, aged 7 and 9, were separately detained to intimidate him to confess to anything that the torturers wanted him to confess to. 7 and 9. There's more. Stick around.
Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Or will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul.
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. Yeah, we got enough to talk about. We have enough of a burden to carry around right now without getting into this topic that is obviously mucho verboten as far as media is concerned, as far as government is concerned. And I think even the human rights organizations are tending to stay away from this particular topic. The United Nations Committee on the Rights of the Child is not, but this is pretty bad. Thousands, literally thousands of children in Iraq and Afghanistan have been detained. Children all the way down to ages 5 and 6 and 7. According to Michael Haas, who is the author of a new book, he's a very prolific author. If you do a Google on him, his new book is George W. Bush, War Criminal. He says that while detained, several children have been brutalized and tortured at Abu Ghraib. American guards videotaped Iraqi male prisoners raping young boys but took no action to stop the offenses. Perhaps the worst incident at Abu Ghraib involved a girl, aged 12 or 13, who screamed for help to her brother in an upper cell while she was stripped naked and beaten. Iraqi journalist Suhaib Badr Adn Albaz, who heard the girl's screams, also witnessed an ill 15-year-old boy who was forced to run up and down Abu Ghraib with two heavy cans of water, beaten whenever he stopped. When he finally collapsed, guards stripped and poured cold water on him. Finally, a hooded man was brought in. When unhooded, the boy realized that the man was his father, who doubtless was being intimidated into confessing something upon the sight of his brutalized son. While General Hamid Zabar was being questioned in Iraq, his interrogators decided to arrest his frail 16-year-old son in order to produce a confession. After soldiers found the boy, he was stripped, drenched with mud and water, and exposed to the cold January night while bound and driven about in the open back of a truck. When presented naked to his father, he was shivering due to hypothermia, clearly needing medical attention. At least 25 war crimes specifically to child prisoners. War crimes is listed in various international agreements. Among the crimes are the arbitrary transfer out of their home countries, leaving their parents to wonder whether or not they are dead. When some of these kids, when their locations were later revealed, parents were not allowed to contact them, even through the mail. Children have been incarcerated in the same quarters as adults by the U.S. Forces, contrary to the Geneva Conventions. This is not pleasant stuff at all. U.S. authorities have refused to investigate or prosecute those who have abused children. There have been no programs established to prevent prison mistreatment or to assist in the resulting post-traumatic stress. They have been denied legal counsel and a statement of reasons for their confinement upon arrival in prison. They've been denied that. They have been held far beyond the so-called speedy trial requirement under Geneva Conventions. They have been coerced into confessions that may be false and denied available exculpatory evidence, including witnesses. You know, it sounds like we're talking about adults here. We're talking about children. we're in a bad position, and as interesting and as educated and as good of a leader that Barack Obama appears to be doing, his his refusal, at least out in public. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We really don't. And it's difficult to state categorically that this president is doing nothing. You and I don't know. Maybe the groundwork is being laid. Maybe not. He's been there 102 days. The Bush crime family operated this murder and mayhem for 8 years. Wow. You know, you read the stuff and you just think, they're not talking about us. This is not us. How could we have done this? It's astonishing. The first time in 1993 when the Trade Tower was attacked and bombed, and I forget the number, there were injuries, but it was not a couple of deaths, and I don't mean to minimize. One death is a massive tragedy when you're dealing with something like a terror attack on the United States. The blind sheikh, so-called, who, according to a court testimony, engineered that, and he seemed to have been proud of it. All the people involved in that were tracked down and now serving life without parole in prisons in the United States, where obviously they will eventually go insane. But they were caught and prosecuted. They were given the rights of any criminal who commits an act in the United States. What happened the second time the Trade Tower was attacked? Obviously, the second time, there was assistance provided by the Bush crime family in bringing the towers down and murdering 3,000 people. Active assistance or passive assistance, you decide. You know, I mean, there's no point in getting into the 9/11 stuff now. If you believe the story is presented by the U.S. government, presented by the Bush crime family, it was not U.S. government, presented by the Bush crime family, then okay, that's the case closed. Forget about it. But, you know, I don't, as do millions of people, don't believe it. But the second time it was used, engineered, set up, allowed to happen, whatever you want to say, as an excuse to do what they did subsequent to that attack. And that was the invasion of two countries. It's almost like there was people in power in the United States, people in control that had absolute control over everything, over the military, over the intelligence agencies, over prisoners, over deployment of troops. The people had control, absolute control over everything, went insane or were insane to begin with, and did things in the name of the United States, in the name of the Star Spangled Banner, in the name of the flag, in the name of the U.S. Constitution, in the name of all of our laws and legal niceties and everything the United States thought it was, did things that, yes, by legal definition constitute war crimes, but by other definitions constitutes a total debasement, a total ripping away of whatever facade of morality or ethical behavior or any of that stuff that you and I thought we had in this country. And we're not naive, you and I. We know the history of the United States. We know what we've done. We know this and that and these and those, and we do. We know that. But these son of a bitches, these cockroaches, this Rice, Cheney, Bush cabal that extended out like the web of the most poisonous spiders that had come together and decided they were just going to bite and infect and kill and destroy and subvert and collapse everything. I mean, it's astonishing, down to and including kids, children. What does it say about a country that will drag in 5 and 7 and 8 year olds in front of a parent who is already being tortured and either actively assault those children or threaten to? What does it say about a country that does that? You know what it says to me? That country is finished. It's just a matter of time until somebody comes along with a broom and a dustpan and sweeps up the debris. That's what that says to me. That's where I live. That's the system within which I vote. That's the place I, send my child to school and go to the grocery store and go to the park on a Sunday to have a picnic and go to the ball game and all that. I live there. And so goddamn it do you, unless you're listening outside the United States. That's where you live. You live in a country, as I do now, that has no moral restraint whatsoever. We will torture children to get to the truth. No. To get to justifications. To be able to say, see, we told you there was a link between Saddam Hussein and the people who attacked the United States. So, how do you handle this? You know how we handle it? You handle it the same way I handle it. We don't think about it. We use the single most effective evolutionary device ever developed. After 2 million years, we have it, the human species, and it's denial. Absolute denial. If we're going to have self-awareness, if we're going to have the I am bug running around inside of our being, if we're going to have consciousness, then we absolutely must, or we'll all go insane, have denial. Now, right-wingers, people who are most removed from the truth use denial as an absolute shield. Ah, that didn't happen. What the hell are you people talking about? God damn, more of that liberal garbage. That didn't never happen. Jesus, stop it. Yeah. Oh, man, you're out of your mind. All the way down to hapless suckers like me and you who know it did happen, who understand the karmic debt that we have built up now, who understand that we no longer have a soul in this country. We just don't. It's gone. I don't care. You can meditate. You can chant Om. You can go to the desert. You can do anything you want to. But it's gone. The moral center that this country might have had at one time or aspired to is gone. Why? Because we torture children.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Lauren writes in, Mike, Omar Khadr, who was 15 when he was arrested and put in Guantanamo 6 or 7 years ago, remains there, and our dear government here, Canada, refuses to help him. This kid is a Canadian, I guess. He is now accused of making bombs, as well as the previous charge of throwing a grenade at Americans when they invaded his country, right? I don't know. I mentioned denial a minute ago. We probably get so deeply involved in denial, more so than we're aware of. I mean, I don't wake up in the morning and think, I live in a country that tortures children while the parents are watching. I mean, I can't do that. That reminds me of the death camps in Germany and Poland during World War II, where that sort of activity took place by another race of civilized people who produced some of the greatest art and music and literature and poetry in the history of the human race. And they went insane too, didn't they? So here we are. And so, I can't get it when we think about that. Neither do you. If I didn't have this job, I wouldn't think about it at all. I would do the equivalent of putting my hands over my ears and screaming la, 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 la all day long, and make it go away. We have got to live in denial in this country, because if we don't, if you think about this, if I think about this, anyone thinks about the despair that would descend on you, I mean, if you really opened up your head to what we have done, or what our what the Bush crime family did in our name, what we allowed to happen because we allowed these murderous sons of bitches to continue. If we thought about that and really examined it, and I think this is the reason there's so much hesitancy, the on the part of, you know, our new leadership, the despair that would settle in over this country would be like a blanket under which somebody had pumped carbon monoxide and we would all lay there and die. We're not capable of handling this. We are not capable of handling what the truth would reveal about what has happened in our name for the past 8 years. You and I cannot handle it. Do you get that? Do you understand that? I know I can't. I cannot handle it. I think one of the reasons it is so crushing on me is because I have a 5-year-old and I also have grandchildren. My 9-year-old grandson was just here for a visit. And I look at Jake and I think, okay, supposing Jake were taken somewhere and tortured. See, you know, I can't even go there. What kind of an adult human being willfully, willingly, consciously tortures a child? See what I mean? Now, the fact that we do this, the fact that our government has done this, and that we, the people of the United States, have allowed this to happen, and we are not engaged in absolute demand that this stop, that the truth come out, that the people responsible be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. You know, was it Robert Friedman, New York Times, the other day said that trials against these sons of bitches would rip this country apart? Are you kidding me, Friedman? This country is dead. We are a dead country. If this is not handled, we are a dead country. We have no moral claim to anything ever again anywhere on earth. I mean, Jesus Christ, this is not hard stuff. Come on. The other thing here, the fact that we torture children and then close our ears and eyes and mouths about it, except for Seymour Hersh, who I believe is the one who first started talking about this a couple of years ago. We have lost any claim to, not me, I mean, I think this is all nonsense, but those people who stand up and say that this is a Christian nation, are you out of your goddamn minds? Are you crazy? You know, I know enough about the Bible to know that Jesus said that the children constituted the kingdom of heaven. And we have a leadership now, this psychopath, and not now, but the psychopathic son of a bitch, George Bush, and this murderous bastard, Dick Cheney, both of whom should be tried somewhere on earth and made to pay for what they did. They ordered the detention and torture of children, and they claim to be Christians? Oh, for God's sake. See, we don't dare think about this. Any claim this nation has to a Judeo-Christian heritage, throw it in the garbage dump. Flush it down a toilet. It is simply garbage. When you have people at the highest levels of government professing to be followers of Jesus H. Christ, developing torture techniques to be used against children, and you're going to tell me, or anyone's going to tell me, this is a Christian nation? Get out of my face. Get away. That's why we have denial. That's why the human consciousness or unconsciousness or whatever developed the ability to say, no, none of that happened. And if it did, I'm not going to think about it. Because if you think about this child torture thing too long, everything will collapse for you. Everything will collapse for you. You will not be able to look at your children, your nieces, your nephews, your grandchildren, your cousins ever again and feel that warm, fuzzy feeling. You won't be able to do it. You know why? Because you will understand that someone else's children or nieces or nephews or cousins in your name, booby, was brutalized in a prison somewhere by us. So, thank God for denial. Huh? Don't you think?
decided that we're really not to blame for the love that's deep inside us now. It's still the same. And the sound we make together is the music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down and falling down through the light.
All right, welcome back, third hour. Let's unplug the phones here, Ms. Kathy, and invite some folks to call in. The number is 877-996-2556. Paul writes, Americans have the capacity to accept the truth. I think we're hungry for the truth, Mike. I think this is going to be a much-needed national ego adjustment. This is long overdue. It will either happen, and it will be cathartic, or we will collapse trying to synthesize it. Paul. I don't know how a society maintains any sort of integrity. By that I mean integral cohesion, knowing the things that we know. I don't get that. I also, you know, I watched 25 people be take the oath of citizenship today, that swearing-in ceremony, if that's what it's called, that Barack Obama presided over with Janet Napolitano, and there was someone else there, and I'm drawing a blank on the third person. But I watched these 25 members of the U.S. military, none of whom was a citizen, all of whom now are, after taking the oath today. And it was kind of moving. I had never heard the full oath of citizenship presented. Consequently, I didn't know what the oath consisted of. But it has some arcane language to it that sounds like it's from the 18th century, or certainly the 19th. And But still, it was very moving to see these 25 people stand there and repeat the oath of citizenship, and at the very end, be declared American citizens. But I immediately had the thought, why do they want to do this? I'm not trying to be cute here. What was it that motivated these people to first join the U.S. military? All right, now, and there was every branch represented there that I could see, pretty much. There were Marines, there were sailors, there were regular Army. I don't know, I guess I didn't see any Air Force people, and I'm guessing by the uniforms, but what motivates people to join the U.S. military? If it's a path to citizenship, okay. I'm talking about foreign-born people. People who are not citizens. They join the military knowing that this is a shortcut, in a sense, path to U.S. citizenship. Why do they want to be citizens of the United States? Some of these people, their countries of origin were Jamaica, Cuba, Cameroon, Poland, Colombia. It was a pretty Nicaragua. It was a pretty diverse group of people. Geographically diverse group of people. And I just is it because they're leaving a society or a country that they don't feel offers them the same opportunities in the United States? I would assume that was it. But surely these people understand our immediate past history. Surely they know that they are swearing allegiance to a country that has decided that this kind of gruesome abuse. Not to obtain intelligence. Remember, we've already established this. I don't give a goddamn what anybody else says, whether on Fox or somebody in Eric Holder's office or somebody who's a politician. I don't care what they say. What we have established, you and I, because we are intelligent people, we know now what the torture was all about. The torture was not about uncovering plots against the Republic here. The torture was about forcing people to provide information that Cheney and Bush and the rest of these monsters could then present as the ex post facto evidence as to why the invasion of Iraq was so necessary. That's what the torture was all about. Had nothing, abso-goddamn-lutely nothing to do with providing actionable intelligence where it concerned subsequent attacks on the United States. You know that. I know that. The world knows that. Most of America doesn't know that. You know, with few exceptions, most media still refer to these detainees as terrorists. We have all these terrorists. Remember what Cheney said? The worst of the worst. You son of a bitch. The worst of the worst, Mr. Cheney, is you. You. But when Cheney talked about the worst of the worst is what the dregs, the filth, is the murderers, is all that's left in Guantanamo. And you and I both know that that is just a horrendous obscenity to say that. That's like this pig Neil Bortz and the rest of these right-wing talk show hosts, Jay Severin and the rest of them now, talking about Mexicans. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. This country has truly, as long as we are a society that gives free access to these hate mongers and liars and this filth that has polluted the airwaves, polluted our brains, like the pig man, like Hannity, like Bortz, like Severin, like Savage, like all this filth. What is it about American media that they think, the corporate owners think that this filth is what people want to hear? I don't get that. I honest to God don't get it. But I don't get anything. I don't get anything. So. Okay, let's do some phone calls, all right? Because I know you folks are getting tired of hearing me rant on like a madman tonight. I didn't plan on doing this topic tonight. I have here on the desk, you see, a stack of things, articles that I've printed off from various sources, everything from the New York Times to Information Clearinghouse to Consortium News to BartCop.com, just all kinds of stuff all over the place. You know, I print this stuff off. I want to talk about it. I want to get it out. I want to hear what you got to say about it. And two things happen. The stack gets bigger and bigger. And I get started and I keep going. And all of a sudden I look at the clock and it's, 3 minutes until we have to get off for the night. And so this story about the child torture, it's not a new story. Like I said, Seymour Hersh and The New Yorker brought this up a couple of years ago. It's not a new story. Jane Mayer, in her book, it talks about it. And this guy, Haas, talks about it. I'm looking at that stack this evening, I thought, Jesus, what is this? You know, I know I printed it off. I know it caught my eye, and I thought, well, maybe I should bring it up tonight. And I start going on that, and I know it must make for lousy radio. It really must. Because we have all agreed, you see, all the way up to the President of the United States, we have all agreed to pretend. We've all agreed to pretend that we adhere to the principles of, truth, justice, and we don't torture, we don't, principles and justice, rule of law. We've all agreed to adhere to those principles, while at the same time, we also have agreed to, I can't say that on the air, to dump stuff all over those principles. We've also agreed to be schizophrenic, to involve ourselves in saying one thing and actually doing something else. And then we, you and I didn't do any torture. You and I didn't write the memos. You and I didn't even elect George W. Bush or Dick Cheney. And in fact, nobody elected them. That was, it was five people on the Supreme Court. But we've done nothing. We've done nothing. And that's because we choose sanity and as opposed to insanity. If we get too involved in this, we'll go insane. But here's the truth. You ready for the truth? The truth is we're already insane. Not insane. Non-sane. Any group of people, let's suppose we had 10 people living on an island, and among those 10 people, there were like, I don't know, pick a number, 8 children. And let's say two of the adults on the island decided that a fun thing to do would be to torture and cause pain to the children. So while everybody was sleeping, these two adults got the children out of bed, took them to the far side of the island, and started torturing them. And the screams echoed and reverberated across the island. And you and I and the rest of our adult group would get up, and we'd run over, and we'd see what was going on. What would we do? We would probably exact immediate justice. We would probably confine them and maybe execute them for what they had done to our children. Well, there's not 10 of us. There's 300 million of us. And we're not doing a goddamn thing. Nothing.
When you think about the money spent on defense by a government and the weapons of destruction we built, we're so sure that we need. And you think of the millions and millions that money could feed.
Don't know much about history, don't know much biology, don't know much about a science book, don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that I love you.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
What a wonderful world this would be.
Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a slide rule is for. But I do know what it is.
21 past the hour.
And if this one could be with you.
Okay, phone calls. Phone calls. Jasper is calling from Memphis, listening on Sirius XM. Hey, Jasper.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
What I wanted to talk about is betrayals and all them Bush top military men that is still in the military. And if Barack doesn't do something to remove those guys, he's going to be in trouble. See, now, betrayals had to know about the torture, and he put up a so-called weak defense to mount the surge. And getting our guys over there killed. See, that man is not military material. I don't care how you pop him up or how you try to sell him. That man, he just a puppet for the big old war machine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we got a problem there.
Yeah, we do. There are some people in the upper ranks of the military who are certainly, watch out, get your head down, incoming.
Yeah. And see?
Well, where are you, Jasper?
I'm heading from Nevada. I'm finna go home to Memphis in about another hour. I've been in Memphis another hour and get on my Harley and do some riding.
Oh, it sounded like a missile heading your way there for a second.
Yeah, I know it, man. Like I said, I'm gonna throw this cell phone out the window. I'm throwing my cell phone with you, and I hope it don't hit you, man.
I hear you. What I was gonna say, there are a lot of good people in the military in the upper ranks. There are also a lot. Here comes another one. There are also a lot of people who, you're absolutely right. They have no more business being in the military than robbing banks or.
I'm saying it.
Anyway, go ahead, Jasper. It's your dime.
Okay. What I'm trying to say is, Mike, that betrayals and when they ordered that invasion of Iraq,
right.
You don't invade a country like that. Our guys left wide open, man. They're spread too thin trying to come up with a defense. We're going to get whooped every time. They're going to have to go somewhere and capture a city like North Korea and South Korea. They're going to have to secure that city and make it safe for the people, families can walk the street. And so the outside can see in. Now, once the outside started seeing in how the people can live and how they go about sending their kids to school and doing different things, then that whole thing will collapse. But betrayals, man, he's just an opportunist. I just don't like him. I don't trust him. And he's going to set Obama up, and our people are steady going to get killed over there for nothing. And all that money we're popping over there, man, we ain't got no hope in the prayer over there, man.
I hear you loud and clear, Jasper. Thanks, man. Take it easy. Drive safe. You know, it's pretty difficult, isn't it, to invade countries now and force them to accept our sterling form of self-government when we are a country that does what we do. We got it down to science. We send these drone aircraft up now that are controlled by people pushing the buttons and firing the Hellfire missiles from where? Houston, Texas, and or Fort Hood, Texas, and you have drone aircraft flying over mountains in Afghanistan. And somebody out there has provided the coordinates to an Air Force specialist back in or an Army specialist back in Fort Hood, and when the drone aircraft gets within targeting range and locks on the target. A button is pushed, and there goes a missile. And if it happens to hit a house where a bunch of kids are playing, or there's a wedding going on, or people are barbecuing a goat or whatever the hell they do, and they all get blown to pieces, you know, doesn't mean a thing. And I just wonder, the young person back in Fort Hood who pushes the buttons, you know, who types in the coordinates as provided to him through whatever communications it's provided to him, he types them in the computer. Does he actually push the button, or does the computer push the button? I mean, who's responsible for all this death? How do we set ourselves up here? Seriously, I'm serious. This is really bugging me. It's really giving me a headache. Not that that matters, but I'm just saying, how do we now and present ourselves to the rest of the world as being, you know, the United States of Jesus loves me in America? How do we do this? How do we do it? I don't understand anymore. I don't. I am so hopelessly lost. And maybe you are too, so I'm probably asking the wrong folks, right? You don't know what the hell the answer is either. I'm just kidding. There's no answers. We have a break coming here. We're going to come back and take your phone calls. We have one open line. Come on now, 877-996-2556. You want to get your weekend started right by listening to all this horror on the Molloy program, right? Oh, Lord have mercy. We'll be right back.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Molloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Steve is calling from Tennessee, where he's driving, listening on XM Sirius. Hey, Steve. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
My phone about to go south. I just wanted to play. I heard Tom Hartman, either Tuesday or Wednesday, to show you how much influence you have. He referred to the Bush administration as the Bush crime family. He said, as Mike Molloy calls it. So you are important to us out here.
Okay. Well, you know, Hartman is someone I've known for a long time. And I'll have to send him an email now and tell him he owes me a royalty for using it.
Well, you're worth it. I bought two of your podcasts, and I urge everybody that's listening that if they can't afford $40 or $50 a month to buy your podcast to keep you on the radio, we have got to keep you. You're the only man I've heard talk about the children being tortured over there.
Yeah, now remember, the price is only $60 a year.
Right.
Right. I just want to make sure that, you know, you said, I think you said $40 or $50 a month.
Yeah, the point I was trying to do, get to, because I pay each, you know, by the month. I couldn't buy the whole year.
Well, that's only $7.95 a month.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I was saying was for them to buy another podcast to amount to $50. What a, you know.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I know it's cheaper to buy it by the year, but, you know, my wife's out of work right now, so I'm having to pay for it by the month. But
I hear you.
I got half of her family. I every time I talk to them, I tell them to sign up for your podcast, because whatever it takes, we got to keep you on the air. And I talked with Miss Kathy when I called in a while ago and asked her if y'all got the T-shirts and all yet.
You know, that's coming. You know what I've heard, Steve, the people who are putting that together? That's going to be up, what, Kathy, next week? It's supposed to be next week. And this is all stuff made in America. It's union-made. Right. And it's supposed to be up next week. So, just keep going to the website and it'll be there.
Right.
Hey, listen, thanks, man. You've been a live commercial for me tonight.
Yes, sir. I tell everybody I run into out here to, you know, to listen to you and go to your website. And, you know, cause like I told you before, whatever we got to do to keep you and Kathy on the air, we got to do it.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it, Steve. Take care. You're driving in Tennessee. Be careful. Driving in Tennessee can be dangerous. I know. I've done it enough. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate you checking in. Bill is calling from New Jersey, listening online. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, I don't know if I can call you young fella. I'm going to be 63 tomorrow.
Well, happy birthday.
Well, thank you. generally, these people are right, man. You're the keeping it lit to point the darkness in this country. But and you're having fun with it tonight. But anyway, I wanted to bring up a couple things. I have this theory that Arlen Specter is possibly a Republican plant. The word Specter means ghost or spirit of some sort. it could be an anagram for our line, Republican line, Specter. So he can find out what's going on in the
No, I'll tell you, Bill, I don't think he's a Republican plant. The Democratic Party is a Republican plant. There are so many Democrats, so many Republicans in the Democratic Party. That's why they don't do anything. But I think Specter is just somebody who didn't want to see his political career end on terms other than his. I mean, I'm going to be kind of brutal here. Arlen Specter is in a world of trouble with all this cancer that's been eating at him. Now, I know he's in remission, and bless his heart, I hope he stays in remission until he's 110, but I don't think that's going to happen. The kinds of cancer that he has are the type that don't stay in remission too long. Having said that, and I respect him for this. He wants his political career to end on his terms, and it may be sooner rather than later because of his health. And his terms is not to be run out of his office by some snot-ass, right-wing Nazi Republican in Pennsylvania who will then be defeated, in the general election by a Democrat. So I think what Arlen Specter did was a means of political self-preservation. I don't disrespect him for that. I just think, you know, it's just part of the game. Don't forget, Arlen Specter has a pretty lousy voting record. If he wants to call himself a Democrat and vote with the Democratic caucus, have at it, Arlen. But, and the other thing too, Bill, remember this, he was upfront. He said that. I mean, you gotta respect him. He didn't say, well, I'm doing this because I believe in my country and God and the flag. He said, I'm doing this because my career is not going to be ended by somebody in a primary. So, you know, he was talking about Arlen Specter job security. But I wouldn't worry about him being a Republican plant because there are so many Democrats who are dinos, you know, Democrat in name only. And, I don't trust these suckers as far as I can throw the state of Pennsylvania. So I think we're on.
Well, I got one more.
Sure,
thing.
Sure.
And I haven't heard anything in the news about it, and you haven't talked about it, but I know there's a lot of pressing issues, as you bring out on your show. But the folks who talked about the brown people, the black people, the white people, the yellow people, I haven't heard a mention for a very long time about the red people, Native American. My great-grandmother was full-blooded Cherokee, Arimathea Stars, what a beautiful name. But I know some of these Native Americans got casinos, but that doesn't take care of everything. The Plains Indians, as I understand it, are still suffering with not much stuff to grow because stuff won't grow where they're situated. And is anything you heard about that?
No, I completely understand the best that a white man can, Bill, about what Native Americans have dealt with for the past 400 years. A little bit different from what African Americans have dealt with for the past 400 years, but, you know, kind of the same. Both were involved in genocide and brutality and so on and so forth. But Native Americans were to the white European settlers what the Palestinians are to the white European settlers that went there. You know, they happened to be Jewish, but that was, I was going to say beside the point, but it wasn't the point, beside the point. It was the point. So, if you want an example of what can happen to indigenous people who are, made invisible until they're all dead, you can look at Native Americans, you can look at Palestinians, there are other places around the world. You can look at the Aborigines in Australia, although I think the Aussies are trying to do something about that. You can look at the Maoris in New Zealand, although, I don't know. I don't know. I hear what you're saying, and yeah, you're right, Bill. Sometimes I wish that we could focus on issues that were more indigenous to the United States, you know, our issues, because torture and war and lack of health care, I always feel that those are alien issues, that they shouldn't be the issues that we have to focus on, but they are. But I hear what you're saying. Thanks, Bill. Nan is calling from St. Louis, listening online. Hey, Nan.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thank you for bringing this up. I've written letters to the New York Times, the St. Louis Dispatch. I've alienated every single person I've known. And finally, it's out. I thought, how can we have a path forward if it's over the bodies of tortured children?
Yeah, really.
Every time I hear the arguments about, is it torture, isn't it? Is it blah, blah, blah. I think, forget that. What about we torture children?
Yeah, I know. I know. We have lost our way in this country for sure, and it has nothing to do with whether or not gay folk can marry. It has nothing to do with whether or not a woman who seeks the privacy in order to control her own body where it concerns an abortion. You know, that's not where we've lost our soul. We've lost our soul.
No, we deserve the government we get nobody can speak up and say anything about this, then we do deserve the government we get. And I've been thinking the Democratic Party is more dangerous than the Republican Party because they have the illusion of reason having and they're not any different.
Well, you know, the Democrats say one thing and do something else. At least with the Republicans, you know, they're lying sons of bitches who would cut their own mother's throat or their own grandchildren's throat, for that matter. I got to leave it there. Thanks, thanks, Nan. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance.
It is 10 before the hour. As we bring another week of Malloy programs to a screaming halt. Sorry for the downer tonight, right? See, I apologize for talking about something that Americans should, as soon as we found out about it, never have let happen. But anyway, thanks to our crew, Kathy Bay, who engineered and produced all this week, Ben Birch, who is our technical advisor, Sharon Gordy, who is our military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, economic affairs correspondent, and Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, ethical correspondents or advisors, and the executive producer, did I say that, is also is Kathy Bay. A new Mike Malloy Uncensored Mailbag is up at MikeMalloy.com. If you are a subscriber, it's there for your pleasure, so to speak. Please become a podcast subscriber if you feel the program is worth 25 cents. Because that's what it'll cost you, 25 cents a show to do this. And it's commercial free.
Well, I was going to say that. But I also wanted to say next week we're going to have another episode. We skipped this week, Radio Gumshoe, but we'll have one next week. And I was just reading over the script, and it's not to be missed.
Is it très funny?
I think it could be very entertaining.
All right, yeah. Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, that'll be up next week. It's still free. You still do not have to be a podcast subscriber to hear that.
No, but all the episodes are there for podcast subscribers.
Yeah, they're all there together,
so
right.
So they can just go chunk. So.
Right, but we will be doing it on the air next either, I don't know, Tuesday or Wednesday, right? Coming up soon. James is listening on Sirius. XM driving in Oregon. James, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm all right. Well, first to say, I usually don't ever agree with you. I'm a conservative, Christian, ex-military. But Bush, Cheney, they crossed the line, and they should be prosecuted. It's totally not what America stands for. It's not what America is about. It's not what I serve my country for. But can we go a little bit further and say, everybody who knew about this, everybody that was involved in the torture, knew about the child torture, knew about waterboarding and all that, that they need to fall along with whether they're Democrat, Republican, conservative, whatever. Can we just say that to agree?
Well, I think anybody who was aware of this program and said nothing has is involved on a moral level. They have their own internal dialogue to deal with. If they are believers, if they have a faith or a belief, they're going to have to reconcile their silence with what their particular religious belief tells them is right and wrong. And, but they didn't violate the law. The ones I'm concerned about, you know, I don't care what, Nancy Pelosi or Jane Harmon knew. I really don't. Or Rockefeller. And yes, a lot of Democrats understood what was going on. I gotta be honest with you, James. I really don't give a damn about those people. They will have to deal with this in the privacy of their own souls or their own minds or whatever they believe in. To stand silent when they know that this sort of thing is being conducted in the name of the United States of America speaks volumes about who they are. But here's the bottom line. They didn't violate the law. The people who violated the law are the people who acted in contravention of our law, international law, our treaties. Now, if we don't like treaties, then we ought to redo the Constitution of the United States, because the Constitution clearly states that treaties to which we agree become the law of our land. I mean, that you can't violate those laws and stand around and say, well, if the president does it, it's not illegal. You served in the military, then surely you understand that this the Universal Code of Military Justice absolutely prohibits a soldier from following what is clearly an illegal order. If any of our military got involved in torture, then those people, yes, they should be removed from the military. If they're officers, they should be ordered to resign. If they're enlisted men or women, they should be tossed out The military does not need people like that. But the people I am concerned about are the people who wrote the torture memos that justified, that attempted to twist and bend and just totally reconfigure the law, and the people who ordered them to do it. Now, as far as the people who actually did the beating or the hanging or the torturing, yes, this idea that, well, I was only accepting or following orders, that is not a defense. You know, we hanged people after World War II for using that very defense. Germans and Japanese, and not just people who were involved in combat. We hanged judges. We hanged people who so perverted German law as to allow the things to happen that did happen. So when you say they all should fall, they didn't violate the law. To stand silent while the law is violated and to say, well, I didn't really know, I heard this was going on, they're going to have to deal with that in the quiet of their own ethical understanding of themselves. You get what I'm saying there?
No, I understand that. But Nancy Pelosi and them, you know, I mean, they authorized it. They ran it by them. They told them this is what's going
to
happen.
No, they didn't have any power. Well, they didn't have any power to authorize anything. You need to be clear on that, James. And we're just about out of time. We're down to seconds here. They didn't authorize anything. This was executive orders. This is like Nixon saying, if the president does it, it's not illegal. This came from Cheney. It didn't come from Nancy Pelosi. So, you know, we need to be clear on that. James, thanks. I got to go. Appreciate you checking in. Hey, listen, have a large weekend, okay, or a small one. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh yeah, have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney!